Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Tuesday, July 26th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynes of the Guardians opened a four-game series in Boston last night. And once again, rain was falling as Zach Plesac pitched at Fenway Park. And the result was not a good one for the Guardians. They lose the game 3-1 to Boston after Plesac gives up three runs. And stop me if you've heard this before, but the Guardians failed to score runs in support of Zach Plesac in one of his starts.
Yeah, just another frustrating night for Plesac in a game where, you know, he kind of grinded. He really didn't pitch that badly. Gave up three runs in five plus innings and gets one run of support. And Joe, he has made 18 starts this season. And in 11 of those, his teammates have scored one or fewer runs. I mean, he's lucky he's won two games this season. He really is. He hasn't won since early June, I don't think. And just, you know, I hope this guy, he does yoga or something to ease the stress.
Well, he does. He's one of those guys who walks the field with his bare feet and, you know, sort of gets into the Zen. But I wonder how much Zen is left in the tank right now. Every time you turn around, and this time at least, it wasn't his teammates booting balls behind him, leading to extra long innings and frustrating outings that way. This was more damage inflicted by Boston's lineup. And we're talking about a Boston lineup that coming into this game had been hurting. They've been, you know, devastated by injuries, and it doesn't have exactly the same thump as the kind of Boston lineup that just tore through the Guardians when they met back in May. I really got to wonder what's in Zach's mind when he just looks out there and says every time it's such a struggle for these guys to score runs. Nobody's come through with a big hit for him in how many of these starts. You can sense it when you talk to him after these losses that he's frustrated and that he's thinking in his mind that he's got to say all the right things and do all the right things and not throw his teammates under the bus, but it's got to be driving him crazy.
Yeah, definitely. It's a hard, you know, it seems like on every staff, there's a guy, you know, there's a pitcher that kind of ends up on short end of the stick when it comes to offensive run support. But this is nearing historic levels. We haven't seen this in a long time. I guess you just got to grind your teeth and just keep working your way through it. You know, the last thing you want to do is, you know, like you said, you know, throw your teammates under the bus, you know, start breaking things in the locker room. That's not going to solve anything. But, you know, the question is, you know, you can see, you know, he gives up a run and then all of a sudden, you know, the vice starts tightening and tightening. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy doesn't make a play behind him and it gets tighter and tighter. He knows he has to be perfect almost to, you know, have a chance to win or have a chance for his team to win. And it's just not happening for him.
Well, and you talk about, you know, like not throwing your teammates under the bus and breaking things in the clubhouse. Zach's learned those lessons already. He's seen what happens when that happens because, you know, he was buddies with Trevor Bauer. He understood what happened when, you know, Trevor threw his teammates under the bus after a rough period like that. Zach himself has missed time because he broke his thumb on the chair in the clubhouse, ripping off his t-shirt in anger after a rough outing. So he knows that, you know, getting his emotions in check is something that he needs to do. And like I said, it's been remarkable that he's held it together this long. You like you said, through 18 starts, but at some point you got to think maybe a change of scenery or something, you know, is due, and it could turn him around. Or do the Guardians just ride this out, knowing, you know, his stuff is really good, and he's a fighter and he's a grinder and he gets through innings. There's just got to be a point where some of this comes together for him. You look over at a Shane Bieber, and he's so smooth and he's so put together. And, you know, even when there's a rough outing, he bounces back, and the next outing he goes seven innings and strikes out eight or nine guys. You just haven't seen that from Zach Plesac yet, where he just takes over, takes command, and says, okay, it's just me and the other opposing lineup, and I'm going to do my job. And, you know, you get an outstanding day like that.
It comes with maturity. I think, you know, we've talked about this before. We've seen it before with, you know, Cy Young winners and CC Sabathia and Cliff Lee, how they would get frustrated when something went wrong behind them. And gradually you grow out of that. You mature, you know, you handle the peaks and valleys of the game. That's part of being a professional. And Zach is learning that lesson, you know, in too many times this season.
All right. Speaking of learning lessons, the Fenway Green Monster taught a few lessons last night to Guardians outfielders. Stephen Kwan, you know, looked like a seasoned professional, you know, a veteran playing a ball off the Monster early in the game, and then later in the game, kind of burned him with one that bounced over his head. Miles Straw also having a little bit of difficulty with the outfield there in Fenway. The conditions weren't great last night, obviously, with a rain delay, not a very long one. But, you know, that ballpark is a huge home field advantage for that team.
Definitely. You know, Kwan and Rosario hit a couple 400-foot fly balls, drive the ball into deep right field. At Progressive Field, the ball's probably out of both. Those are two home runs. But, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. makes easy catches of them on the warning track in front of the bullpen. And then the Monster comes back and bites Kwan and Straw on, you know, first. Bradley hits the double off the wall in the second inning, and it bounces over Kwan and Miles Straw. And then in the sixth inning, you know, Alex Verdugo, you know, hits the double high off the wall. And Kwan, you know, after playing that great, he played, you know, the a single by Yolmer Sanchez perfectly, you know, threw the guy out at second, run scored in the second inning. But in the sixth, you know, Verdugo's ball, he got too close to the wall. Mm-hmm. It came off the wall hard, got past him, got over his head. Then he slipped and fell on the wet outfield grass. And, you know, that was the run that really was – that was the deciding run that scored on that. And, right. You know, Francona said, you know, we had all the outfielders out there before the game working on the wall with Kyle Hudson. And, you know, but – just one session at Fenway Park, you're not going to learn all the secrets of the wall. You're not going to turn into Carl Yastrzemski or Jim Rice. And Francona just said, you got to live this, you know, and you just got to live it and learn from it and move on.
All right. Our good friend, Tom Withers, who writes for the AP and covers the Guardians, actually played in a game a couple weeks ago at Fenway Park, and he was on the field wearing a Cleveland Larry Doby jersey. He posted a bunch of the pictures on social media, and, you know, it was his eyes, just his face just lit up talking about playing in that ballpark and playing a game. It was a game between between New York and Boston media. And because Tom works for the AP and he had worked out of New York, the New York guys let him play on their team against the Boston guys. And, you know, the pictures of him in front of the Green Monster were pretty incredible photos. And even more so, he's telling stories about, like, you get up close and you look at the Monster up close, and there's the scoreboard. It's like an aluminum sort of metal, because you can hear it when the ball rattles off of it. He says there's little indents and little, you know, like pock marks all over the wall for all those year, all the years that it's been up there. Every ball that hits it, they don't like, you know, smooth out the dents or anything like that. You can't really see them on TV, but there's these little bumps all over the wall from where the balls have hit, where the balls have been hit off the wall for all these years. And he, you know, for Tom, he said that was pretty like, you know, it meaningful to see all that. It's a great story to just talk about him, talk to him about playing at the, at that park, that, that experience, one that he's going to cherish forever. So maybe we'll have Tom Withers on here to talk about, playing at Fenway and playing in front of the Green Monster. Maybe you can give Quan some pointers.
Let's hope.
Yeah. So, so yeah, they dropped the first game of the series. The Guardians do, you know, they've lost three in a row now after winning what, four or five in a row. And again, we're sort of back in that limbo phase with these guys that they get within a game of the division lead. And then they lose three straight. It's one step forward, two steps back, lately with the Guardians and this young squad.
Yeah. You know, they're 3.5 back right now, Joe. The Twins were off, last night. So were the White Sox. So the White Sox are 4 back. The Cleveland is 3.5, and the Twins, you know, are in first place at 52-44. I just, well, like we've talked before, you know, this is such a critical road trip for this team. You know, especially leading right into the trading deadline on August 2nd. I really think it's gonna, you know, really kind of play a big part in determining what course of action they take, the front office takes.
And make no mistake, with Boston being in the state that they're in, and, you know, a lot of injuries to their pitching rotation and now to their position players, their lineup is different. It really is sort of an opportunity that this team can take. If they can win these next three games in Boston, it's right there for them to sort of be in contention once they get home and the schedule sort of loosens up a little bit for them. They've really got to get through a good team in Tampa Bay over the weekend to do it. But, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities to take, you know, two games down there in Florida as well.
Yeah, and Boston and the Guardians are, you know, I think neck and neck for the third wild card spot as well. So these three games are important in that regard too, you know. So it's just really a critical part of the season right now. And you just wish that it wasn't so hard for them to score runs, Joe. It's just, this is such a, you know, when it works, it's fun to watch. It's, you know, old school, like old school hockey, you know,
right.
I mean, singles, doubles, people, you know, going first to third, but it's hard to do that when no one in the lineup is going to hit the ball out of the park and, you know, score three easy runs or two easy runs or go up, you know, take a 5-0 lead in an inning when you don't have to send 10 guys to the plate. It's really a difficult way to play baseball.
And we've seen flashes of it when guys do hit the ball. The game a couple last week when Jose Ramirez hit the two home runs earlier in the game, you know, everything, the offense just sort of starts to flow, and it's like you know, it's like Drano. You get one through, and then everything flows through. The bottom of the lineup turns it over to the top, and guys are getting on base a little more. But that just hasn't been consistent. That game happens once every, you know, 10 to 12 games, whereas the more common games are the ones where it's a struggle. You get a guy on second base and you need two more hits to get him in. And it happens more often than not. With this offense, we've seen some things that we like from Steven Kwan. Ahmed Rosario really, the way he's gone about just his, you know, professional hitter, that's what he is. Again, why there are so many rumors about trading this guy, who else are you going to have to get on base in front of Jose Ramirez? It's tough to think about, but like you said, Jose Ramirez not driving the ball the way he was earlier in the season. I think that thumb is still bothering him a little bit. It might have been why he batted right-handed in the home run derby. Framil Reyes slowly coming out of things in his slump, but again, the strikeouts are still there, so it's still killing every rally when he strikes out. You know, Josh Naylor, good in the clutch, but you know, prior, if it's not seventh inning with two outs and you know, two guys in scoring position, it's like things don't click for Josh yet. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, it's kind of a, it's, you really have to be a fan to watch some of these games. You really, I mean, you have to buy in. And tonight they're going with a bullpen game, and Brian Shaw, it looks like, is going to be the opener, the starter. And Lord knows where that's going to take us.
Yeah, Brian Shaw opening. More than likely they'll call up Kirk McCarty because he's on the 40 man. So that'll be the guy who gets the, hopefully, the lion's share of innings there. Get him started and get him through the you know, maybe second, third, fourth innings, or third, fourth, fifth innings. We'll see. But Brian Shaw, if he's going to try and turn him into a Tyler Clippard, you remember Tyler Clippard when he was here, you know, right. Started so many of those bullpen games where he just came out and, you know, gave him one or two innings and then handed it off to a guy like a JC Mejia. And he gave you a few there. So maybe that's what Tito is hoping will happen. They've got to find a solution for that spot in the rotation though, don't they?
Yeah, that's critical. And do you call, I mean, is Pilkington the guy? I mean, do you call him up and just, you know, until Aaron Civale comes back, you know, that's probably your only option, right?
You've got young options. You've got guys who you could force into that. But, you know, do you want to start the clock on a Logan Allen or a Xavion Curry right now? Those seem to be the guys right now at AAA who are the most likely candidates. And maybe the player development guys know who's ready. They've shown that in the past. So if they haven't made those moves, it's because the player development guys have not come to Tito and said, look, this guy's ready. He will get the job done. You know, we've seen it so many times in the past that they were right on the money with that. So, you know, if they haven't made those moves yet, it's because the player development guys haven't said that they're ready.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, you look at, you know, how they handled these situations last year, and Eli Morgan, you know, played a big role in that. He made 18 starts last year, but, you know, because of the kind of the shortage in the bullpen, he kind of fit into that seventh, eighth inning role. And now you just can't start him now. I mean, right. It would really be unfair. I mean, you'd risk hurting him. You'd have to probably send him down to get stretched out. So, you know, that's one more option that you don't have that you had last year.
I mean, if you would send him down to get stretched out a month ago, maybe, sure. But right now, he's nowhere near ready to be able to help them in any way in the starting rotation. So you saw how long it took Cal Quantrill last year to make that transition at the major league level and everything they had to go through to get through that. I mean, Cal was going three innings at times when he first started to make that transition and was getting frustrated that he was getting pulled early, but they just had to protect him. Yeah. So, I mean, you're right. But look how it paid off this year with, you know, at the second half of last year and throughout this season, he's been one of the top pitchers in the American League. So, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Quantrill has, you know, been kind of the backbone of that rotation. You know, he gives them, what, five, six, seven innings every time out. Really an impressive job that he's done.
Right. All right. Other news in Major League Baseball. The Major League Baseball Players Association turned down Major League Baseball's proposal for an international draft, thereby triggering an agreement made with this last collective bargaining agreement that restores the qualifying offer system for free agency. So there will be no international draft. There will be a qualifying offer system at the end of this season with free agents, something that the players themselves aren't huge fans of because it's sort of limits guys who are free agents and sort of keeps teams from going after some of these big name guys.
Yeah, interesting. I think this is probably the closest they've ever come to having an international draft. It seemed like both sides were serious. But Joe, it's just a huge issue to get your arms wrapped around and, wrapped around. It just, it entails so many countries, so many different players. What do you do in Japan? They have the posting system, but they have their own professional league. Korea has their own professional league. Mexico, and so, it's a complicated issue, and I'm not surprised they didn't get this thing worked out.
Yeah, and there were so many former players, particularly in the Dominican and the Latin American countries, who really went to bat and said, "Look, you can't do this because it will screw up not just the pipeline of talent that comes from those areas, but it's going to hurt the country and the communities and the area around that and most of their agents down there who sort of take advantage and game the system as well."
Yeah, I mean that's baseball is like I don't know what the number one economy of the Dominican is, but baseball's got to be right up there, second or third. That and that's a that's you know
Probably
that.
tour. It's probably tourism, Hoinsie.
Yeah,
If I'm
tourism and then
guessing.
baseball. Yeah,
Yeah.
but I mean that's.
Having visited the Dominican a couple of times on vacations, I would say tourism right up there with shortstops.
Yeah, that's right. And but that that's that's a whole economic system down there, baseball. They have their own way of doing things. The draft would come in there and maybe clean things up. You wouldn't have the corruption that you do. There wouldn't be kids six kids that were saying they're 16 and really 21. That would be you would be able to clean that up, and I think to a great extent they have cleaned that up. But there's all sorts of under the table payments. There's all sorts of stuff that goes on that I think a draft would take care of, or at least kind of bring shine a light on in the dark corners of the things. But it's just a really, really tough issue to get a handle on.
Yeah, and you think about all the talent that Cleveland has benefited from, particularly in the Dominican. Even right now on the team, the top players on the team all hail from the Dominican Republic. So, just thinking about how that system needs to change over time might be a good thing, but you can't just snap your fingers, have an international draft, and just torpedo the whole system. You would have chaos, and it'd go well for the little people would get hurt, not just the teams and the agents and things like that. All right, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. The Guardians and their bullpen game again tonight in Boston. We will be back with you again tomorrow to wrap it up here on Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.